Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm John Norman in Auckland, New Zealand, where the cool winds of autumnal change are starting to blow through for this week's programme, which has a true collective feel to it. With the world coming to terms with huge day-to-day challenges, putting this show together has been a podcast in itself. So huge credit to Steve Harmison and producer Scott Taylor for getting us this far. And what a programme it promises to be. One that starts out in Durham, England, and ends in Auckland, New Zealand. As coming up, Big Steve is in conversation with Durham Chief Exec Tim Bostock, Director of Cricket Marcus North, and First Team Coach James Franklin. And then we head back here to New Zealand, where lockdown's also been announced, and a chat with top NZ cricket journo Andrew Alderson. Don't go anywhere for the next hour, folks, as we bring you the Cricket Collective, starting with that man, Steve Harmison.
I was hoping to have this conversation with Tim Bostock, Marcus North, James Franklin in the boardroom of Durham County Cricket Club, overlooking the castle, talking about my great club and, you know, what's happening with Durham County Cricket Club. And I'm delighted that Tim Bostock, the Chief Executive of Durham County Cricket Club, joins us now. And Tim, with what's happened to the club over the last few years, and the fantastic work that's been done in the club in the last couple of years, you know, to get us back on our feet and going forward, has this put us back to square one?
Afternoon, Steve. Thanks for inviting me on. Sorry you couldn't make it. Obviously, times are a bit tricky for everybody at the moment, to say the least. Listen, answering your question. Well, no, it's not put us back to square one, to be honest. I think if this had happened this time last year, I think we would have been in a much more stressful position financially. Fortunately, there's been a huge amount of really, really good work in getting our finances back on track over this last 12-15 month period, and therefore we're in a stable position. When I look around at some of the other counties and some of the larger counties, I think they, ironically, are in a much more tricky position. The reason for that is that they've got businesses that rely on income outside of ECB regular monthly funding. And particularly, I can think of Lancashire and Warwickshire and Yorkshire. The Aegeus Rose Bowl, who've got hotels and big conference facilities, they've borrowed heavily against those. They've got fantastic businesses. They've done the right thing. They've diversified their income so that they can survive without ECB income. But what that has meant is that, if I can give you an example for argument's sake, their income might be 70% diversification income in events, conferences, hotels, 30% ECB. Well, of course, that 70% has fallen off the edge of a cliff through no fault of their own. Everybody's cancelled. Obviously, the hotels are closed. And therefore, that is a major challenge, because whilst they've lost that revenue, they're also carrying all the costs for those businesses as well. Whereas a club like Durham and some of the other sort of middling counties, if you like, financially, A larger percentage of our income comes from the guaranteed ECB income as a result of the new television deal. And therefore, we are much less exposed because of that. And therefore, we can cut our cloth accordingly. We know what comes in every month and we know what goes out every month. So, you know, I can confidently say that what's coming in is a lot more or more than what's going out, which I think for anybody, whether they're paying their mortgage or their bills, household bills, anybody who's listening, I think that's it's obviously a good position to be in. So we're very thankful that we've got ourselves in a much better position. As I say, still difficult times.
Yeah, that's fantastic to hear somebody from somebody like me as well. So that, how much that club means to me, and you know what sort of the decisions that the big decisions have you had to make as a chief exec? You've mentioned other counties, but as Durham's chief exec, because the county of Durham is historically a fantastic place. The university, everything that goes with it. But it's not the most sort of affluent area. It's not financially. It's not the richest area in the country. So as chief exec, what sort of decisions have you had to make sure the club is in the right foot and four, hopefully, when we get back on track?
Well, the good news is on that, in terms of our staff, and that includes obviously all of the players, all of the coaches, all of the people that work in the academy, all of our youth workers, our foundation, the Durham Cricket Board, and then obviously the backroom staff here, financials, marketing, commercial, Riverside Events, who run all our events. The good news on that is that we absolutely are in a position whereby we don't need to lay anybody off.
Brilliant.
And we don't need to reduce anybody's salaries. And we as an executive, and that includes the board and the senior leadership team, had a meeting last week, went through the numbers, and we have taken the decision that we know we've got extremely loyal people that work at Durham. I mean, I know more than most, having only been up here for just less than 2 years, but obviously I'm a northerner myself, not as far north as you guys, but I know how much community means. I know what the north's like, and I know that people stick together and we look after our own. And I think that is what we decided to do, rather than take the option of reducing headcount and making savings. We took a view that we would support, because we understand that a lot of the people that work for us, a lot of the players, are extremely worried, extremely stressed. They've got mortgages. They've not got a whole lot of cash to splash around. They make the very best and the most of what they've got, and therefore we think it's important for us to support them, because we will get through this. The game will get through it. The country will get through it. And then when we do get through it, I think the opportunity for real growth and upside after that will come. And to be able to take advantage of that, you need your best people with you and you need your loyal people with you. So we show loyalty to our people now, and they'll show loyalty back to us when that time comes. And it will come, Steve. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, I've got no doubt it will come. And it's and that's great to hear, especially for young players' point of view, Tim, because the role of the PCA is fantastic. Yourself, you have the meeting at the start of every year, and they do look after some young players. But there's players in the game, and it's like all sports. It's football the same. The top end look after themselves, but the bottom end, it is very much dog eat dog world. And I'm sure from a club's point of view that the younger players are getting good information and well looked after from the club, but also from the PCA.
Yeah, they are. PCA have been brilliant, as you would imagine. I mean, over the years they've become sort of bigger and stronger, if you like, and they've got a more powerful voice, which is absolutely right. And we do have, the very nature of our squad, as you know, we've got a lot of youngsters. And they're not earning a great deal of money, but they've started to take on, as you do, you start to take on commitments, whether it's buying your first house or starting to rent and moving in with girlfriends or whatever it might be. You suddenly start to, you're on your path. It's your career path, if you like. And therefore, the last thing you need then is suddenly think, wow, all that disappears, or some of it disappears overnight. And what do we do now? I mean, being a professional sports person is it can be a fragile existence anyway. You're one bad season away from worrying about your future. So there are different stresses involved. So as much as we possibly can, and that's why, we're going to support all of our staff, and obviously the younger players particularly, we've got to look out for, because obviously nobody's been through something like this, but if a few of us have been through financial crashes in the sort of 2008 era, but some of our youngsters have not been through any of that at all. So it's extremely important we look after them.
And I'm sure you've been talking to a lot of other CEOs and the ECB about when the cricket starts again. Has there been any difference in opinion about what to prioritise? Because there has been talk. I seen Michael Atherton on TV talking about it the other day. And, you know, is it the 100? Is it the blast? Is it county cricket? You know, do counties have different priorities because of the size of the counties? Or is everybody on the same sort of hymn sheet that, you know, we want to try and get the best possible outcome for when we do start playing cricket again?
Yeah, listen, the good news is we're all on the same path in terms of what the priorities are, and that includes the ECB as well, which...
That must be for once, is it?
It hasn't always been the case. But on this one, and this is very, very much necessity because of, as you would know, working in the media, talk sport with Sky, it's the broadcasters that need the content. They're desperate for content, so... It's pretty clear that international cricket comes first, which includes test matches and the T20s and the one-day internationals. And then after that, it's the Blast and the 100, which that's where the revenue is. I mean, the Blast obviously is the revenue earner for all of the counties, no matter what size they are. So protecting that is really important. Protecting the 100 is important, obviously, because that was the competition that obviously drove the big media deal. Although... you know, in the conversations that I've had, and certainly with the ECB, you know, if it gets squeezed right the way through to the end, you know, if it ends up being a 2-month season, which is possible, like an August September season, I think a view will be taken about: is this really the right time to launch the 100? And you know, I think from my perspective, I think the ECB, Tom Harrison, has been really pragmatic about this, and you know, I certainly get the impression if we end up with a 2-month season. I think the pragmatic view would be, you know what, what's the point of launching this competition now? Let's launch it properly next year. So I think we're all on the same page. If it's a 4-month season, there's lots of county cricket in the schedule that I've seen. If it's a 3-month season, there's plenty of county cricket as well. So we're all absolutely committed to county cricket. But the first three cabs off the rank have got to be those competitions that I mentioned. And only if we get to a 2-month season will county cricket... be a problem, i.e. there probably won't be any. But certainly in the schedules I've seen, Steve, in a 4-month schedule and a 3-month schedule, there's plenty of county cricket and enough county cricket to have a meaningful county championship, which I think would be great news for our members. I mean, I've had more than a couple of emails and letters complaining about the fact that we seem to be prioritising, the ECB prioritising those other comps. But there's an absolute financial imperative for that. And at this time, more than any, I'm afraid they have to take priority. Otherwise, the conversation I had with you about keeping everybody on and making sure that you know, that it would be a different conversation. So there is a price to pay. And if it's county championship, I would rather it be the county championship than having to lay people off. That is the last thing we want to do.
Yeah, it gives kids, you know, young players, because let's be fair, the county championship is where the young players are going to make their name in the game. And, you know, fingers crossed we do have a county game. If not, potentially that white ball cricket will keep them in jobs for next year to get their county game. And speaking about the county game and the game of cricket, there's been talk of playing cricket behind closed doors. You know, it is possible you can play and keep a distance sort of from each other. There's many times and many people I'd love to have kept a distance from, especially on a cricket field. But Josh Butler came out on TalkSport this week and said he would be a fan of it only if it was on TV.
Yeah. Well, I think it would probably only happen if it was on TV, to be honest, because I think that's where the pressure would come. So if Sky, for argument's sake, say, listen, we need a minimum of, you know, 4 test matches. We need a minimum of the one-day series against Australia. We need that content. Otherwise, there may well be financial repercussions in terms of the broadcast deal. I think then you would definitely look at playing behind closed doors and producing that content for the TV viewers. Because from Sky's perspective, and I'm just thinking as a sports fan myself, having not been able to watch any live sport on television, it's killing me, never mind not watching live sport. So I've got to watch reruns of you bowling against the Windies and things like that, Harmy.
That's about 5 stone difference now.
Well, I had to watch Marcus North bowl some extremely poor off spin against
there
England.
There might be six there.
But anyway, I think the point is that I reckon Sky would break all their view. As soon as they show some live sport, whether it be a live test match behind closed doors or a one-day international, they get 5 million people watching. So there is upside in some of this stuff in terms of getting something on behind closed doors. But at the end of the day, it'll be a government advice situation that I think if they say, listen, as long as you follow strict protocols, you can get a game on behind closed doors. We may well have to do that to get that content for the broadcasters. And I'm pretty sure that's what the Premier League are thinking about now. They are. I'm certain they're working through that because they've got exactly the same problem.
Well, Tim, thanks very much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I wholeheartedly wish you well. Not just because it's Durham and it's my county, but everybody in your position, your fingers crossed, you can keep the wolf from the door and we can get this great game playing again very, very soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Army. Appreciate it. Cheers.
More to come on the Cricket Collective with Steve Harmison in conversation with Durham's first team coach, James Franklin.
Gone a long way, James Franklin. Yes.
Oh, that's a big shot from Franklin. That's all his power into that shot, into the stands. Oh, full toss. And bye-bye.
Look at the contact. Hello. Hello. Who's going to catch this? Gone.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. I'm John Norman, and still to come, Durham's Director of Cricket, Marcus North, on the challenges being posed to players, especially overseas ones, with the coronavirus delaying the start of the season and throwing people's livelihoods into question. Also, top New Zealand cricket writer Andrew Alderson on whether the problems affecting UK cricket will be mirrored here in New Zealand. But first, let's get back to Steve with Durham's first team coach, James Franklin.
Well, James, you're coach of Durham County Cricket Club. I thought it was a fantastic year for you last year. What's happened with the club over the last few years, finishing fifth in Division 2 County Championship, but always, always in with a sniff of potentially getting promotion. And I was watching a few of the 2020 games. I know you finished sixth in the North table, but you were right in it at the end. How you feel last year went, coming into this year, you must have been buzzing, thinking, right, well, let's get to Zimbabwe, hit the season running, and then this has just knocked you back a little bit.
Yeah, very much so, Harmy. We've had a really good winter. The boys have trained unbelievably hard and applied themselves not only to improving their cricket skills, but the application in terms of trying to improve their strength, their fitness work has been outstanding. So I couldn't have asked for anything more from the playing group. And yeah, obviously very disappointed, as I guess a lot of sports people are around the world, with obviously what's going on virus. But it's obviously a much bigger issue than sport and cricket. But yeah, just to go back to the first part of your question, I think last year was a really good year for me, coming in first year sort of in a coaching capacity and sort of observing the group and how individuals work when things are going well and when things aren't going so well. I was thinking after the first four games, it could be a really long season. We lost our first four championship games. But credit again to the group, the wider group as well, because we used 25 or 26 players in first-class cricket, that they were able to respond to that poor start and turn the ship around. And we actually got on a bit of a run through the mid part of the season and didn't lose a game for eight games and got ourselves into a prospect of potentially getting promoted, which wasn't to be. We sort of fell short with a couple of games to go. But there was really good improvement in championship cricket, which was great to see through the season. And then the T20 stuff, yeah, we came sixth, but if we'd won a game or two more, we probably would have been in the playoffs. But we're probably not the only team that could say that. There was probably a few other teams around the country, and the games we lost were probably our own fault, that we let ourselves down. So again, a lot of good things to look at and improve on, and know that we can be better and compete better again once we do get playing cricket again. And obviously the one-day stuff, we were a decent team in one-day cricket last year in the Royal London 50 Over. We Done by the weather a little bit, with the last two rounds being cancelled for us due to rain, and that sort of cost us a position in the playoffs. So all in all, I think first year in coaching this Durham team was an exciting year. A lot of improvements and good progress, and as I said, you know, the winter's been great, and yeah, just really, really frustrated with the current situation. But you know, there's, as I said, bigger things in sport at the moment to worry about.
Yeah, there are. And yeah, how do you keep your players going? You know, the season, you feel as though it's upon you. You can feel it, and then you know, the unknown of not when it's going to start. You've got a lot of young players to try and keep them fresh and focused, but also, you know, stimulated to make sure that, you know, when it does get a date, you are ready to go.
Yeah, that's the tricky part of it, Harmy, is you know, we've got a little bit of line in the sand from the ECB coming out back in the last week and saying at the moment May 28th is a date that us as professional cricketers, professional bodies can sort of start to work towards. That date may or may not shift. I think they've got another meeting about May 28th, sort of in mid-April, to see if that is still an appropriate date or not. So we'll firstly work off that. At the moment, all the guys are training. They're keeping their strength up. They're keeping their fitness up. Our lead strength and conditioner trainer, Sam Clark, is posting some good videos on our WhatsApp groups to keep the guys motivated in terms of how they can keep their fitness up. In terms of cricket, we're really limited, obviously, in terms of facilities that we can use, and we can't really train together because, again, that's not really done. So we'll just take a break from cricket for the next week or two, most likely. And then once we can sort of get a green light to potentially get together again in smaller groups, whenever that is appropriate, we'll look to do that. But we don't know the rules, and that's the point. I think as a society, we don't really know the rules. We're sort of getting told new ones every day or every other day, and we've got to do the right thing by society, not just by cricket. So whilst you think of your winter, and as I said, we've been outstanding through the winter in terms of our preparation. We've got to go with the flow. It's a very fluid situation, this one, and we've just got to try and be ready individually, that when we get the green light to be able to get back together, that we're kind of in some sort of shape to be able to crack on and hopefully play some cricket at some point in the summer ahead.
And the challenge of a head coach, I know you get a lot of stuff taken off you by Marcus North, who we're also going to hear from. But the players' welfare in this situation must be a massive thing for you as a head coach, and a learning curve for yourself as a young coach, as a new coach coming into the game. Because, like I mentioned before, you have got a lot of young players, and in this situation, them young players will probably, it's only human to be thinking, well, what if the season goes this 2 months? What happens if it goes 3 months? If county cricket's not out, am I going to have a job? I'm just a young lad. I'm trying to, and out of no fault of my own, I might not have the chances I get. How challenging is that as a young coach?
Hugely challenging, because again, I don't know what the right outcomes are, and these are all, you know, pertinent questions that you raise that I think, given time and how long this pandemic goes on, we won't know the answers to. You know, you think about guys that live by themselves, that, you know, we've got a couple of guys that their origins are elsewhere in the world. So majorities of their families are elsewhere in the world, you know. So they're here, they're away from their wider families. You know, they're potentially living by themselves. There's isolation. Your mind starts to wander, like you're saying, you know, you've done all you can through the winter, and then this gets kind of taken away from you with this pandemic in terms of your job. And yeah, you start to, I guess, stew within your own mind about, you know, what's going to happen. Some guys are in the last years of their contracts. It's a really tricky one. And you know, as Durham, cricket, sport, we're not alone. You know, it's all wide lines of industry with people with their jobs and stuff that, everything's pretty vulnerable at the moment. So, yeah, I think it's important from our point of view, and what we can control is just trying to keep consistent messaging out to our group in terms of, you know, what's happening, what we're looking to do, just keep updating them and keeping them, I guess, motivated to want to keep training and keep being ready.
And Josh Butler, England's World Cup wicketkeeper, he's been on TalkSport talking about playing behind closed doors, but only on TV. Do you think that's a good thing? You know, because there are, you know, I made the joke before, you know, there's people whenever I play cricket, there's people I just didn't want to get anywhere near of, and you can keep yourself away from each other. But is it something that you think could be, you know, the first step of getting back to playing sport again by playing behind closed doors on TV? Because the game of cricket is quite unique in a way where you can keep a distance from each other.
Yeah, you can. To be honest, Harmy, I haven't really given that much thought. I think it just depends how much of the season we can actually potentially get in. If we've only got, you know, let's say 2 or 3 months worth, then yeah, why not? Why can't we get as much as we can on TV? It would obviously mean you can keep some sort of social distancing in place in terms of crowd factor. And also, as you rightfully say, with cricket, we're not arm in arm the whole time playing this sport. Quite often there's at least 10 or 15 metre gap between players most of the time. So potentially, yeah, that is a scenario that I could see would be a positive. But again, we don't know how long this is going to last. The whole season might be gone for all we know. We just don't know how this is going to play out. And so scenarios, I'm sure the ECB will be starting to draw them up now in terms of if the season starts May 28th, this is how it looks. If it starts June 30th, if it starts July 31st, all these different starting points, they'll work out how much cricket we can potentially get in, what competitions we can play, what competition might need to be left for a year, and then, you know, what games get put on TV. Do we put them all on, or do we only put half of them on? So until we know actually when we can all come out of our holes and start playing again, it's kind of a little bit pie in the sky in terms of what ifs.
Well, when we do, I wish you well, not just because you're a coach of that fantastic club, but I do wish you well and in the season when it does eventually start. Good luck, James.
All right. Cheers, Hammy. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Still more to come on the Cricket Collective. You're listening to TalkSport 2.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Oh, he tried to leave that and he's got it through the gap, and there it is. Gareth Breeze scores the winning runs. It's a magical end to his career with Durham. And Ben Stokes, who's played such a key part in this late season revival, hugs his man at the other end, and Durham have done it. They've got there by 3 wickets, but it's been a tight, tense old day played in the gloom.
You're listening to TalkSport 2 and the Cricket Collective, broadcasting every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7 o'clock in the evening. And now an in-depth interview between Steve Harmison and Durham Director of Cricket, Marcus North.
Well, Marcus, the challenge of the modern-day Director of Cricket, looking at bringing the squads together, managing sort of budgets, working with CEOs, the overseas players, academies and things like that, the challenges. But the biggest challenge must be at this moment in time the well-being of your team, your club, because you have to make the decisions on young players and contracts, or whether you get a contract, whether not getting a contract. How do you manage that at this moment in time? Because there's people work so hard, players work so hard in the winter months, who potentially could go into the last year of their contract and are no fault of their own, being quite vulnerable.
Yeah, very much. Very good points, that, Harmy. I don't have the answers for that yet. obviously, this situation that we're all facing globally, certainly when it comes down to a director of cricket role, is certainly not in the job description, I can tell you. but I guess from the most important thing at the moment is kind of managing everyone's expectations. It's more around player well-being. These guys have worked tirelessly over the last several months in preparing for a season that at the moment is postponed indefinitely, well, until the 28th of May, but I'm sure that will be assessed on a weekly, if not daily, basis. So, our planning was outstanding. From Frankie and I to all the coaching and the players, the last few months has been absolutely brilliant in preparation for the season. And then you get something that you're completely inexperienced at. None of us experience this situation, and we've got to manage that expectation where these guys are going full pelt, and now they're literally down tools because we're pretty much as a society in isolation. So it's very much just communicating with the players. As we know, things are changing on a daily basis, and just trying to keep them informed and making sure they're okay. And I think once the weeks kind of go by, we get a bit more of an understanding of the landscape, and we can make some good decisions around that to see, if there is a chance to play some cricket this summer, and how we build in a kind of return to training and return to play mode. Until we figure that out, Harmy, talking about contracts and people in their last year, it feels pretty much impossible to kind of even think about that at the moment. I think we've just got to see what the landscape looks like over the coming months, and hopefully, as we all are praying, that we can get through this and have some cricket towards the back end of the summer.
Yeah, it does seem pretty harsh talking about that element of the job, but it is what comes with being being a director of cricket. And you talk about communications. How's the communication going with the other 17 counties and the ECB about the challenges that they're having as well?
Yeah, very much so. And we all have some contacts and people we know a little bit better within the circuit we talk to. But the ECB over the last week have been good. I mean, they've got a tremendously difficult job to play in this part of having another number of different scenario options of what the season might look like. That they're virtually have got to support the game in a whole financially. How the this season pans out is going to affect different counties and different business models in a lot of different ways. It's the communication's there, but I guess it feels like you have a pretty good strategic meeting in where you're at, and put some plans in, and then 2 days later they've expired because things have changed, whether it's from government direction or from the ECB. So it's a very fluid situation. I think that's as an administrator, or certainly at Durham's point of view, we've just got to kind of roll it out over the coming days and continue to try and make good decisions with all the information at hand.
And you mentioned there having different players and different conversations, and you've got overseas players. Cameron Bancroft. I'll talk about Cameron in a minute, but the likes of Benningham and Berhardine, two players you've signed from overseas, on whatever it's a Colpack or the how do you manage people like that? Because you've got players, young players that are from Durham. You've got players who are maybe from Nottingham, from London, who could potentially nip home. But these guys are on the other side of the world. And like yourself, you're from Australia. Frankie's from James Franklin's from New Zealand. You know, yeah. How do you manage people like that? Because you know we are working in sport, but this is about human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. It's far bigger than the game of cricket or sport. And I think with those, you got to treat them individual cases very much that way. If there comes a discussion where a player feels his better option is going back to his homeland, well, then that's a discussion and common sense will prevail and will support players that potentially want to do that. Players within our squad that might be from other parts of the country, you know, virtually we're in, from a cricketing point of view, we're not going to be doing any training. They've got their own physical, things to do at home, whether it's in the back garden or what have you, or down the park. And that's pretty much all they can do. So if some of these guys want to go back to their parents' house that live, you know, for example, in Kent or Southampton, well then, you know, I'd rather them do that and be in a safe environment than be stuck in a one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartment. So, yeah, look, I think there's a bit of common sense, and that goes back to what I originally said about just maintaining that communication with the players to make sure their well-being's good. You know, I think you and I, Harmy, we've got kids and family, and, you know, it's tough enough when you've got that home base, let alone thinking of what it'd be like to be in an apartment by myself or with another player. So, you know, that's really important that we make sure that those guys are in the best situation possible during this tough time.
And I've asked Tim Bostock, I've asked James Franklin, Joss Butler was on Talk Sport this week talking about games being played behind closed doors, and he said only if it's on TV. And I'm sure I'm sure you've played in stadiums where there isn't that many people, and the game of cricket is a little bit unique, where you don't have to be arm in arm, as James Franklin said. You're not close proximity to others. Do you think the game of cricket could start behind closed doors, and then as the epidemic gets it starts to die down a bit, we get the game back?
Yeah, look, I think we've seen other codes, have different types of opportunities where they've played behind closed doors. Football did it, and that didn't last very long. We know back in Australia that the Aussie rules football and rugby league were played behind closed doors, but that stopped. I think once we get guidance from the government that that kind of environment from a playing point of view is safe for the players. I think the way it's going, I'd support playing some cricket behind closed doors if it was safe for the players and staff to get some cricket on, even if it was on broadcast. That's something to watch. I mean, you're talking about Sky Sports. I'm watching reruns of all sorts of stuff at the moment. There's not a lot going on. So
Northy, I have to be honest there. In the conversation with the chief exec, that he did mention talking about me be watching reruns of me, and I did say I was about 5 stone, a bit heavier. And then he did mention your name, and I did have a little bit of a dig at you as well, because we have put on a little bit since we finished.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we've been in a good paddock, Harmy, I must admit.
It's lovely in the northeast, isn't it?
I was stunned. That was my first reaction. I pick up the phone like a lot of people do in the morning. I just couldn't believe what I saw.
I saw an opportunity to potentially use some tape, get some granules from the from the rough patches on the wicket and try to change the ball condition.
Obviously, it's clear as day what's happened. It's not right.
I don't care who you are, you can't tamper with the ball.
It's Australia yet again. They seem totally out of control.
It's blatant cheating. It's disgraceful. It's not accepted by anyone, and particularly an Australian. We've got the best bowling attack in the world. We don't need to cheat to beat anybody.
I'm not proud of what's happened. It's not within the spirit of the game, my integrity, the team's integrity.
I suppose there is a tiny ray of hope that I may one day be given the privilege of playing for my country again. But I'm resigned to the fact that that may never happen.
To see the way my old man's been.
Thanks, everybody. It hurts.
Steve Smith is such a lovely, lovely guy. You can see there, he's just shattered, I really feel sorry for him.
Look, I'm a believer in sport, especially if you give it, then you've got to take it sometimes, haven't you?
I did a podcast for Durham last year, with Cameron Bancroft, who's Durham's overseas, and we're talking about Durham. And it's 2 years, I think it's 2 years to the day since, you know, as they call it, sandpapergate. How do you think Cameron has come out of it the other side? He did a great podcast and he was really honest. And if anybody wants to listen to it, go to Durham Cricket Club's podcast, because it is out there and he's very, very honest and open with me. How do you think Cameron has dealt with the situation and also Australian cricket?
Yeah, look, I think there's been a bit of water under the bridge and since that moment in South Africa. And, you know, from an ex-player, but also, you know, someone that's closely follows Australian cricket. You know, I feel that they've come a long way. And there's a documentary, you know, on a certain streaming channel, which is kind of a behind the scenes over the last couple of years showing that journey. I think it's a fantastic insight to the Australian cricket team and how they're kind of conducting things.
It was natural as well, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And I think we've seen, you know, the Man City ones. I think Sunderland did one. There's a number of sporting codes or teams that have had that kind of behind the scenes. And I think it was natural. And you know that, Harmy, for being in a cricket environment. I thought it was excellent. So, look, I think Australia's come a long way. I think Bancroft has learnt a lot about himself through that journey.
He led you well last year, didn't he?
Yeah, I was incredibly impressed with how he came over and influenced, you know, the dressing room and the way he conducted himself and played. We all wanted to see the guy. You always want to see guys succeed, but did he get back in the Australian team maybe a bit prematurely? Maybe. Didn't, you know, got a couple of opportunities and then, you know, his form in four-day cricket has struggled in Australia, where he actually found himself out of the Western Australian team at the back end. You know, but his one-day form and his T20 form for the Scorchers was excellent. And speaking to him, sometimes you just have those seasons in Australia, or any season really. When you're playing, you have those moments where you just can't get it to click. Mm. But he's up until a few weeks ago, I was looking forward to that kind of line in the sand, jump on the plane, you know, fly up to the UK and start afresh. And I have no doubt that when Cameron does come back, he'll be in a good frame of mind and perform well. When that will be, I'm not too sure. But he's on a bit of a holding pattern himself. Still in Perth. There was no point of getting him over in the circumstances now. So, again, we'll just play it by ear.
And Northie, like I said to Tim and like I said to James, I wish you all the best, because, you know, that great county, Durham, like to see him back at the top where they belong. And fingers crossed, when the cricket does start, things start moving in the right direction for the club.
Thanks, Sammy. Stay safe, mate.
Still more to come on the Cricket Collective. You're listening to TalkSport 2. Welcome back to the Cricket Collective here on Talk Sport 2. And a big thanks to Steve Harmison, Tim Bostock, James Franklin and Marcus North for a fascinating look at day-to-day life within a county, and a one that possibly doesn't sit alongside the likes of Surrey and Yorkshire in terms of finances, and one that has been hit so hard in recent years with restrictions put on the amount of money they can spend, points deduction and the like. And now here comes the coronavirus just to make things even more difficult. You might be picking up the sound of the wind whipping along the microphone. That's because I'm outside the New Zealand building, the Radio Sport buildings here in Auckland, because essentially I'm not allowed in. This is where we've got to. Lockdown here in Auckland has got underway. It means only essential personnel can get in and out of certain buildings, but that hasn't stopped me. I'm glad to say I'm joined by Andrew Alderson, cricket writer for the New Zealand Herald. But yeah, I mean, look, here we are, sheltering from the wind, lockdown imminent, and yet 10 days ago, New Zealand were playing Australia in a one-day international in Sydney in front of empty stadiums. I mean, the speed of change must have surprised yourself, especially when you consider where we were and where we are now, and it's happened so quickly.
Absolutely, John. And pleased to join you outside the building here as the autumn takes hold in New Zealand. And you'll learn the ways with your warmer clothes as time goes on, and you're ensconced here. But indeed, I couldn't believe it. I was just looking back over time and just how quickly that has evolved in the last less than 2 weeks in New Zealand. They were playing in front of an empty stadium at the Sydney Cricket Ground. They probably got themselves out of a tight spot over the course of the series in a way. But in all seriousness, it's just... evolves so much so quickly, and now New Zealand, that completes their summer. That all those games are called off, with Australia coming back home, or coming back to New Zealand to play, and Chappell Hadley series called off, and it's put some perspective on things.
I was interested to see, and of course I'm not going to try and make a comparison between the Plunkett Shield, the New Zealand four-day domestic tournament here, and the EFL, the Premier, not EFL, the EPL, the Premier League, but the decision was made. Wellington are champions. That's it. Let's move on. Let's work out what we're doing next season. You know, I guess in a way that's probably how most sports codes should be looking at things.
Yeah, it was immediate and it was decisive, and I thought that was good. That's been pretty much the case across most codes in New Zealand. I mean, rugby has been trying to work out another competition if they could put one together, given they had to put Super Rugby to one side. But cricket in particular, the Plunkett Shield, Wellington named champions there. The only downside was that they were named in absentia, if you like. It was decided that they were going to be the champions, and they couldn't actually celebrate the title, although they probably did so in a manner of whether they do it online or something of that nature. They certainly probably opened a bottle or two to celebrate what was their first victory in the four-day title for 16 years. But yes, it was immediate, and therefore they can move on, as you say. And New Zealand's got a few tours mid-year, but they're still some way off. I mean, Bangladesh in August, they've got one before that. June, July, they're going, I think, West Indies, Scotland, Netherlands and Ireland, which is quite an interesting combination. The White Ferns were going to Sri Lanka in May, but all those things can be put off, and expenses can be saved in the meantime, if there's some silver lining from this.
Just been listening for the last while to James Franklin, a fellow Kiwi, Marcus North, an Aussie, and of course Tim Bostock with Steve Harmison. The financial impact that the coronavirus is going to have on county cricket in England, you know, could be really severe. Now, of course, we are entering the winter here in New Zealand, but, you know, this is not something that's going to be going anytime soon. Would there be a financial implication, or what kind of financial implication can you see if the coronavirus is still a problem when cricket resumes here in New Zealand in a few months' time?
Oh, we miss them, I think, and just it's how you deal with the players and the salaries of the players, and whether they'll have to take a cut in that regard. There's so many variables to it. New Zealand do have time up their sleeve now, I think the next series at home, I think, will be scheduled for around about November. World T20, it's going to play on that as well, as to whether the World T20 goes ahead down this part of the world. But I think that that's going to be something that a bridge they're going to have to cross. It's going to be difficult to deal with how they approach that from here on in, especially with the change in the media environment as well. The rights are not with Radio Sport for the radio as they have been in the past. They've moved from Sky Television to Spark, which is a big telecommunications company in New Zealand now for the visual side of it, if you like, through streaming, etc. So there's lots of hurdles to cross there, and now they're going to have to deal with it in the framework of the coronavirus, which is just complicates things even further.
It really is changing times, isn't it, for New Zealand cricket, as you mentioned. Radio Sport, I suppose, are similar to the BBC, TMS, Test Match Special. They've hosted cricket for many, many years. You know, for Jonathan Agnew, read Brian Waddle. For Geoffrey Boycott or Vic Marks, read Jeremy Coney. You know, these are people who are linked they almost to the sport. They almost transcend the sport in a lot of regards. That's, as things stand, that's going to go. And similarly with Sky Sports here, Reed Ian Smith for David Bumble Lloyd, Simon Dahl for Nasser Hussain, that's now going as well. So at a time when the broadcast landscape has changed so dramatically, I suppose the coronavirus and the way that could affect the actual grassroots cricket here, because all recreational cricket's been banned here as well, it couldn't have come at a worse time.
That's right. It's going to be a real difficulty for them to cross when they come to that. I mean, given that they have got some time to plan now, I suppose, but they'll be putting in place, you know, operational systems. They'll be putting in place their commentary teams in that interim. But as you mentioned too, the nature of the game here with all, it's such a wider aspect to it, given that I know just my son's cricket, it was his first season of cricket as a six-year-old this year. That's all been finished now and wrapped up, and if you translate that or extrapolate that out across all grades, it's just this massive full stop to the season. It's something that we've never experienced before. So I think that there's a lot of questions to be asked and answered, and at least they have some time to do that now to actually prepare for what's going to be ahead come 2020 and 2021.
Going back to that game at the SCG, I'm sure you followed it, as I did. We mentioned it on the Cricket Collective last week, actually. I was listening to Radio Sport's commentary. I mean, of all the games to finish up on, if that is to be it for commentary on Radio Sport, I couldn't think of a worse one, essentially. Sound of, you know, Brian Waddle and the team commentating to silence, in essence. But listening to what Tim Bostock had to say, chief executive at Durham, and James Franklin and Marcus North, and listening to what and reading what the ECB back home are suggesting, behind closed doors cricket may actually be the only way of satisfying the requirements of the broadcasters. So this actually could be the way cricket is around the world for the foreseeable. It seems it's either that or no cricket at all.
That's the dreadful conclusion I've made too, is that it's because you have to satisfy those broadcasting demands and because of the money involved, that may be the only solution. And the shame of it is, I mean, we all know that's part of the fun of the cricket, is actually being able to go along and barrack and to be able to absorb a day's cricket, being at the ground in or out of the sun, whatever your preference is, and be able to, you know, I guess, deliberate these things over the course of a day, and that'll be taken away, albeit you'll be able to do it from your sofa at home or wherever. With the coronavirus situation too, you know, would you be able to congregate to do that, or do you just have to watch it in your lonesome and your lazy boy or something of that nature? So I think there's so many different ways we're going to have to re-look at this and scrutinise it over time, John.
And looking outside of cricket, because of course this is rugby country, back home you could say it's football country, I guess the same conversations are taking place in regard to rugby. I mean, what kind of, there's a lot more money involved in rugby, just like there's a lot more money involved in football. Are the same conversations taking place in regard to that sport? I mean, I'm all right saying that the NRL, I think, is that the National Rugby League, I'm kind of guessing, that was playing very recently, wasn't it? And there was a lot of criticism about that.
Oh, there was. The NRL, the Rugby League, has just finished yesterday. They've suddenly done a complete 180 on it and decided that they were adamant the day before that they were going to continue on and push for the season. So much money on the line there over the course of the season. They're saying if they had to cancel, I think it was going to cost something in the vicinity of 500 million New Zealand dollars. I'm not quite sure what that translates to in terms of pounds. But then the Super Rugby as well, the actual rugby union, I mean, that's on ice too, and they were hoping to develop perhaps have some local derbies in New Zealand between the five franchises that play in that wider league. But of course, with the current protocols and having to shut down now, everyone going into lockdown as of tomorrow, that's not going to be possible either. So they're just going to have to recalibrate. I think they're hoping at the moment they might get on the field for the All Blacks on July 4th against Wales at Eden Park. But every chance that that's going to be called off from here on in too, and they'll have to, again, look further ahead. And I mean, and you only have to add the Olympics to the argument as well, athletes preparing for that, qualification periods. It's just the tentacles of the coronavirus beast have just entrapped everything out there. It's just, it's the silent enemy that we just can't, defeat very quickly, put it that way, until a vaccine's found.
Andrew, thanks so much for joining me. We've been at arm's length pretty much for this entire interview. That pretty much brings us to the end of the show. Thanks so much for listening to The Cricket Collective. You can download the podcast. Just subscribe to the Following On podcast and it'll drop into your feed. It's really, the wind is really whipping up here. What better time to call things short. Next week, an interview. Barry Wilkinson, Barbadian broadcasting legend, in conversation with the West Indies Test captain, Jason Holder. That should be absolutely fascinating. Thanks for listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.